Okay, let's give a warm welcome to our speaker, Paul Lee, the Attorney General.
I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. My name's Paul Lee. And just in honor of my voice is really going. It's getting serious, so I'm going to try to keep it toned down, which is impossible. But in honor of my sponsor, Fred T., may you rest in peace. Has anyone told you they loved you yet today? If not, let me be the first. I love you. And that's what we do here. And Fred T. was the love doctor who loved me back to life. He was the guy. And if you're new or you're coming back, and welcome, Stephen, welcome home. You're off the hook. That's the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, whatever was happening out there, you can come in here, you're with people that love you, people that know where you've been, because we've all been there, and let us love you back to life. That's what we do here in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a journey that I wouldn't expect right now, Stephen, that much of what I'm going to say is going to really have an impression, like when I say, my life's incredible, it's unbelievable, I can't believe what's happened to me in all this time, it's unbelievable. However, I promise you this, if you don't pick up a drink or a substitute one day at a time, your life will get dramatically better. It's guaranteed. And the opposite of that is if you do pick up a drink or a drug, your life will get dramatically worse. There's no, like, rocket science here. All of these books are very simplistically read or written for simpletons like me and like us. You know, he said that we're on week three because nobody knows what step we're on. So that's the way Owen gets past, you know, by announcing third step, second, fifth. Here's what we're going to do. It's 8:45 right now. By the grace of God, you people, and with God's help, we are going to be completed with the third step this evening. And then, that's because really these first three steps, it's just like fluff. You know, I mean, everything I'm going to tell you here mostly is my opinion. But there's no writing. There's no, in my opinion, if you come to Alcoholics Anonymous and you sat in a couple of meetings and you looked around and you said, this is something I want, this is something I must have, you've taken the first three steps. Without any mumbo jumbo, thous, thouts, wilts, and shouts, those are the first three steps. You know, my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, somebody had a t-shirt on. The first time I walked into a room, it was actually an NA meeting, and the t-shirt said, I can't, we can. All of these years later, I still can't do this alone. I need each and every person's help. I don't care if you're brand new or you've been here for 40 years. I need you. We need each other. That's the way this thing works. There's no big shots. There's no little shot. One shot, we're all shot. That's the way AA works. I've watched people that have become big shots, and then you go visit them in treatment or you go to their funeral. I'm going to tell a few pertinent stories here because that's what we do. We share our experience, strength, and hope. I have unbelievable experience. I have an amazing amount of strength, and I have overwhelming hope. And that's what we sell here in Alcoholics Anonymous. We sell hope. You know, you might have come from being dope dealers. Well, now we're hope dealers. You know, that's what we do. I mean, it's really as plain and simple as that. Because if you walked into AA and you were looking at your feet and you know, majoring in shoe styles, and now you're smiling and you're hugging and, oh my. Yeah, we were at dinner tonight at Lester's Diner. And I'm here with this new friend of mine. And then this girl from Boca comes in. And so I introduced them, and I realized, think about this. I imagine if you were out there drinking or drugging, and you meet two people in a club or something, and the woman's name is Tao, T-A-O. And the guy who's sitting with me, his name is Ono, O-N-O. So I was sitting here, and Yisrael with the payas and the hat is sitting with us. And I was saying, Teo, meet Ono. And we got the rabbi on the drums. I mean, it was like an amazing experience. Where else could this happen? We're all from different parts of the world. And normally we wouldn't mix. And here we need each other so desperately that we have to mix. And we can develop lifelong friendships. And that's what happens. You know, I'm convinced that I got to Alcoholics Anonymous 11 years after my bottom. My bottom was in 1969. I was finished. I wanted to stop. I had already been arrested a couple of times. I had overdosed. I was living in Harlem in New York City. My life was in a shambles. I was 21 years old. I didn't get to Alcoholics Anonymous until 1980. So without getting too crazy about those 11 years, they were filled with hell, misery, and degradation. They were filled with self-abuse and self-flagellation. And I had become a despicable human being. I mean, I was not even a human being. I was a gutter rat. No, I think that's a compliment. I was a level below a gutter rat. Because I didn't care about anything, anyone in my path, I hurt. The ones closest to me, I hurt the most. Oh, I thought the train was coming in. That's what happens when you're on a coke run. You know, you lock the doors when you hear a train. Welcome. So anyway, so if you come in here, it doesn't matter how low you went, the first step's about surrender. It's about giving it up. It's about just saying, I've had enough. Whatever it is that you did to get into this seat, I quit. None of us like to say, I quit. None of us like in New York City to say, cry uncle. We don't do that. Surrender is a dirty word for people like me. But the only way you're going to get this thing is not only by surrender, but by unconditional surrender. By absolutely admitting to your innermost self, you can't do it anymore. You can't pick up anymore because the tragedies that happen after you're here, if you pick up, they're not pretty. You know, so anyway, so the first half of the first step is the truth. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, and in this group's case, all other drugs. I'm looking here. This is absolutely a drug-infested room. So you know, all of AA is these days. You know, I mean, it doesn't even have to say it. If you use, you lose, okay? I don't care what it is you're doing. So you come here, you're powerless, and that's the truth, and the truth will never change. I'm powerless over alcohol the day I got here, and I'm going to be powerless over alcohol the day I leave here. That's the truth, cast in stone. The second half of that step, that our lives had become unmanageable, that's a fact. And a fact can and does change and has changed in my life and the lives of many other people that have jumped into this deal and realized that we need to find a manager. And that's the segue to the second step. It's no real, massive rocket science here, that we come to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. My sponsor always said, Paul, it says could, not would, because on my case, I was always, you know, half in and half out of sanity. I want to address this sanity issue for 1 minute, because a lot of people that haven't gotten to mental hospitals, a lot of people that maybe were arrested once or twice, usually most of this group's been arrested, but a lot of people that haven't gotten to mental hospitals, I've seen it over the years, they say, I'm not insane. What, are you kidding me? How could you call me insane? That's disgusting. You don't know me. That's right, I don't. However, we're going to take a little survey here. Looking at this side of the room, I'm going to take a guess that there are many people that are currently residing in a treatment center. It's a guess. Call me crazy. And looking at this side of the room, I know that they're maybe not there now, but they've all been there. So here's the point. Here's the question. If you're having a problem with that insanity word, just think about this. This morning, at whatever one of these treatment centers you're living at, someone came in and woke you up, 6, 7 a.m., said it's time for breakfast, 5 a.m., okay, it's time for breakfast. Then at 9 o'clock, you had a meditation group. That was interesting. Then at 10 to 11:30, some moron who's really destitute because they're working there is sitting there and telling you about how much trouble your life is in, and you're listening. Then you have a lunch break. Then you have another 5 hours of more babble, psychobabble. And then you go home, you shower, and at 6:30, 7 o'clock, 7:30, there's a knock on the door. Come on, the van is ready. Now, let me just tell you something. Just for the record, people that aren't insane do not need to be told when to get up, when they can get in the van, and when they have to be home at night. They're doing that because it's not safe for society for you to be out there unattended. Don't you understand that? That's why you're there. Now, if that's not an example of unmanageability, I don't know what is. The great news is we can get past that. That's the great news. I'm going to tell you a couple stories because I was thinking about them tonight. And they sort of have to do with life and the second step and just the whole process. And one of them is really about if you're like putting anything off in your life. You know, all of us, we have regrets. Certainly alcoholics and drug addicts. I mean, I went through a whole regret thing today. I mean, just my head was working. I'm not any cured place. I've just been doing this for longer. So I shared with my sponsor, I shared with my wife, and I'm not there anymore. But the key is here. My dad, God rest his soul, he worked his entire life. He was a New York City cab driver. And his goal, and my mom, God rest her soul, was a school secretary in the New York City school system. His goal his whole life was to work till he was 65, sell the cab. My mom would leave the school system, and they really loved each other, and they were going to buy an RV, and they were going to travel around the country, state to state, little city, and just like to see the country. He loved people like I do, or I love people like he did. And that was his dream, his only dream. He was a real, like, the greatest guy in the world. Did anything for me to try to keep me out of trouble. But this disease certainly went way past his ability, you know, and I just crashed and burned. Here's what happened. 1979, in November, my dad was 65. He had an ear condition from the Army. He lost 10% hearing in his ear. But New York City cab drivers in the old days, they had no hearing in their left ear because there was no air conditioning. And they all lost their hearing because of the horns in Manhattan. It became a disease, a cab driver's ear. So his best friend Harry says to him, you know, Sam, before you retire or anything else, go down to the vets and get full disability for your ear, you know, instead of 20%, so you'll have more money to travel with. Great idea. He goes down to the vets. A man never sick a day in his life. The healthiest non-smoker, family man, loved his kids, loved his wife. And the vets looked at an x-ray at the Veterans Administration. They said, we don't like the way this thing looks, Mr. Efron. Why don't you just go over there and have it checked out? To make a long story short, he was diagnosed with multiple myeloma, a rare blood disorder. Not only did he not get to sell his cab, not only did he not get to live the dream that he had put off his whole freaking life, but he died 8 months later. So what I'm telling you this for a reason. We don't know how much time we have here. I mean, I've been thinking a lot about this. I've been here only 3 weeks, okay? My friend Mikey D died. There's been a few other deaths. We had these calamities. Japan, earthquakes, tsunamis, Libya, Egypt. I mean, This is in 3 weeks. What if those people, any of those people, were putting off something, and then all of a sudden they're flown away in a tsunami, or they get blown away in the I mean, we don't know what's going to happen, and it's not only over there. Right here, right now. So since none of us can predict what's going to happen tomorrow, I strongly suggest a good way to have a good tomorrow is don't pick up. And then you can make all the plans you want in the world. Okay? Because life does get good. And then it gets better. And I'm going to just share a couple of stories about that. But here's another story. No, because I want to talk about the second step. That was more about just my father. We'll get back to it. I needed to say it. Are you going to shoot me? I mean, I felt it. I was thinking about him today. There's a place in this big book, and I'm going to tell you about this place, then I'm going to tell you a story. It's on page 43. It's the bottom of the page. It tells this story about this guy who was sober a while and then went and picked up. And it says here, once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Except in a few rare occasions, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power. Doesn't say it should or it could or we strongly suggest. It must. And you know what? It says it throughout this book. If you're at that place of unconditional surrender, you better find some power. Whether it's the group, whether it's your sponsor, whether it's a statue, I don't care. Doesn't have to make sense. It's just something to get you through to the next place. Okay, because I'm going to tell you this story about how the reason I tell these stories is because they were told to me. You know, not my stories, but the stories before me were told to me. And they saved people's lives. And I'm going to tell you how Ray Allen told a story to me, God rest his soul, that was Fred's sponsor and my sponsor for a while. And he told a story over and over that actually changed the direction of my life, not only the direction of his life. So I'm going to tell you Ray Allen's drunk story. Ray Allen's sober day was March 23rd. Wow. What's today? Wow. Now I know Ray's here. See, now the rest of this half hour will be right there. March 23rd, 1956. Before this step series is over, Bill Wilson was his sponsor. And I have my big book, not this one, one of my big book signed by Bill Wilson because Ray's family gave it to me. So I usually bring it in around 11 or 12. So it's a good reason to stick around. But here's the story. Ray had been one of those people like my friend Scotty who bounced in and out of this program for a zillion years. Couldn't get it, okay? Finally, he got it. He was in Brooklyn, New York, and he's in the deal now. And he's really in the deal. And some guy, this guy Dan, comes up to him and he says, at a meeting, he says, Ray, here's my phone number. Ray had 3.5 years. He said, here's my phone number, Ray. You're going to drink. What I want you to do is call me before you drink. Because if you pick up the drink and you call me then, I'm not going to do anything. If you call me before you drink, because the mind can always be changed, I'll be there for you. So Ray got pissed. He put the number in his pocket. He said, who the hell is he? You know, like Ray was this little Irish guy. You know, who the hell is he? You know, like a James Cagney kind of guy. Telling me I'm sober 3.5 years. What is he telling me? Within the next week, and this is the way Ray told the story. Within the next week, Ray found himself in a gin mill. And he ordered a drink. And the drink and the change came to the bar. And he remembered what this guy Dan had said. And here's what Ray said. He says, you know what? I'm going to call him now because I'm going to be shit-faced in a little while. At least I'll call him and he'll know where to pick me up. This was his plan. The way Ray told the story for 30 years or 25 years that I heard it. He said, I went to the phone booth and I made the call. I don't know what was said, but I left the drink and the change on the bar, never to look back. And he's been sober ever since. Now, for some people, that's a dramatic statement, you know, just leaving the drink. For people that knew Ray, him leaving the change on the bar was even more dramatic. But it was right up there, neck and neck, with major experiences. Now, the reason that became such an important story for me, did I tell the story last week of when my father died that day? Did I? Okay, then we'll pass by that story. Here's an incredible second step story. Okay, Bill Wilson had a white light experience. Bill Wilson cried out to God in his desperation, if there is a God, show himself to me. You know, because he was depressed and suicidal, and he didn't, and all of a sudden a white light, a wind, and he knew, you know, the whole bit. So obviously, if you're like me, you're a little pissed off that you didn't have that kind of experience. Because trust me, I was. I am no longer. Because I've watched the people that have had the white light experiences, and many of them the light got too bright. And, I mean, there's a number of people that aren't here anymore. I'm not saying that it can't happen. It's great. But you know what? Bill Wilson was given such a task by having that direct communication with God, and he never had real happiness. He was very depressed through his whole life. He was just running around. I mean, thank God for him, or we wouldn't be here, and the millions of others wouldn't be here. But he didn't have a real great life because of that, I think. Most of us have a coming to believe an experiential nature. God incidences. Things that happen that we can't just explain away. Okay? Things that happen to us in the course of a day, a week, or a month. And, you know, I told someone last week, and he started doing it, and he's getting the reward, so I'm going to just pass it out here, about the importance of writing a gratitude list. People say it. They say a grateful alcoholic won't drink. I have been writing. I haven't written lately. I probably should start, and maybe I will. But I have 27 or 28 journals in my handwriting from my early sobriety. And any one of them that I open up, no matter what was happening back then, I got through it without picking up. So Mad Glad I said it brings a refresher to me about, wow, and there's always laughs when I'm sharing it with someone in my house that I was doing last week. There's always laughs to me because I say, oh my God, I remember how whacked I was at that time, you know, 20-something years ago, but it had to start somewhere. So a suggestion, only if you want to do it, start writing 5 things a day. Don't beat yourself up if you don't. 5 things a day that you have to be grateful for. Start with the mundane things, 2 eyes, 2 ears, still have a brain, et cetera, et cetera. I have a roof over my head. And then continue. And then as you run out of those kind of things, you start writing, thank God I'm sober. And then you start writing who you see in the meetings. And then you start writing who picked up a medallion. And then you start writing who picked up and died. And I have all of this in my handwriting. I'm telling you, it's an invaluable tool. It was taught to me, so I feel it a responsibility to pass it on. Because that's all we do here is pass it on. I'm going to tell you a story, because I spoke to him today, about a good friend of mine. And he's a rock star. I guess he's still a rock star. His name is Dion. I mean, he's an old rock star. Older than me, and there aren't many people older than me. But he's in better shape than me. But here's the story. In 1958, in this country, there was something called the Winter Dance Party Tour. Okay, I told him I was going to tell this thing. There were 4 groups touring this country in all these small venues all around. Here were who the groups were. Buddy Holly, the Big Bopper, Richie Valens, and Dion and the Belmonts. It's quite a show, wouldn't you say? I mean, you know, so there were all these small venues all around the country to show you the difference between, you know, Eric Clapton today and Rod Stewart today, who just canceled the show, and Dion and them back then. They were driving from place to place in a school bus that had no heat in 1958. All of them. And they're really, the bus is breaking down, and he tells the whole story. But here's what happened. Finally, they get to one of the stops, and it's freezing cold. It's the middle of the winter. And Buddy Holly goes and rents a plane, a small little plane. And he comes back, and he says, all right, look, it's only going to be big enough for three of us, you know, three headliners and the pilot. So Dion, Buddy Holly, and the Big Bopper were going to be the three to go. And Richie Valens was going to just go on the bus. Dion tells in the telling of the story that he went back to his room, and Buddy Holly had said that it was going to cost each of them to charter the plane $36 from this place in Chicago to Minnesota, let's say. And Dion thought when he was in his room, he says, wait a second. My parents pay $36 a month rent. I cannot justify taking a plane from here to Minnesota, number one. Number two, I'm here with all my guys. Belmonts, we've been in the cold weather. It's like a party for us. But this Richie Valens, he's a young kid. He's never, ever been in this kind of weather. You know what? I'm going to let him have my seat. They set it up, so now you have the plane with Richie Valens, Buddy Holly, and the Big Bopper. Dion and the group is in the bus. They get to the next stop, and everybody's listening to the radio about this terrible plane crash that just went down en route to this venue. Now, if you don't think that life is about seconds and inches, and if you don't think that evidently I don't know why those other three guys died, believe me. And they were very dear friends of his and everything. But I'll tell you why. He's 70 years old or something. He's helped millions of people in all different venues. In all different venues. So evidently God had a reason for him not to be on that plane. I don't know how that works. I don't know how it works that people that were supposed to be in the Twin Towers on 9/11, and at the last minute there was a change of plans. There's a million people like that that happened to. It's a game of inches. This whole deal, this whole life thing is a game of seconds and inches. So grab onto this thing. Get yourself a sponsor. Get in the middle of this. Little by slowly come to believe. Because if you believe that there's some power here, which I promise you there is. I mean, look at this. We have 150, 200. In this book, it says mental defectives. And you're all sitting here like, I mean, that's so amazing. Nobody's smoking reefer. Nobody's got needles in their arm. I mean, I'm just looking at this. You're not selling shots back there, Stevie. I mean, the whole thing is like, so if you don't think there's some power in here, and that's what we do in the meetings, we have a power much greater than ourselves. And so, you know, I'm gonna tell you a story about an insane story. Find great humor in me. You know what's even funnier? All my wives did. For a short period of time. Then it gets very old, very quick. Trust me. But here's the scoop. One of the first people I was blessed to sponsor when I got sober was this guy, Richie P. And he was a big guy. And we had a meeting out in Margate that we had started on Wednesday night. And my friend Steve went and picked him up to bring him to the meeting. He picked him up on Commercial Boulevard. The meeting was south of Atlantic behind the Hess station. By the time from Commercial to the Hess station, Richie was unconscious, overdosed in the back of the car. In the front seat, unconscious. Steve comes running into You're not going to believe it. I mean, he's not getting, we were talking, and he's out, he's done. I said, all right, let's go to Margate General Hospital, North Regional, whatever it is. We run into the hospital, they run out with the gurneys, they bring him into the room, the emergency room there. And Steve and I are sitting in the lobby. So they come out after he's in there, and they say, would one of you like to come in just in case, like when he comes to, so he sees a friendly face so he doesn't really panic, because he was a big guy. So obviously you can tell that I'm the guy that says, sure, I'll go. And I love to be in the middle of crisis, especially when I'm not the topic. So I go in the emergency room. He's laying on a gurney. He's got tubes in him, IV. They ripped his sweater off, and he's this biggest guy. I mean, I'm not kidding you. He's big and broad. And they look at him, and they say, he's not moving. He's not responding. So I finally had my dream of all of these years. I'm telling you what. Richie! I mean, I'm smacking him. Get up, Richie! I mean, I'm really big time. How great is that? You have this guy, 6'3", 300 pounds, and you can whack him in. I mean, no repercussions, because he's unconscious. Now, here to show you of denial, insanity, and the second step that we're talking about, or a piece of it, very simply. After X period of time, Richie, lying on this gurney, opens one eye. And he sees me. The next words out of his mouth, Floyd, I swear I didn't take nothing. Listen to me. He looked at me. He made the connection. When you see Paul, you don't get high. He's in an emergency room with tubes and IVs and no shirt on. And his next reaction, I didn't say nothing. I mean, come on, what are you kidding me? That's the power of the denial of this disease. We've all been there, which is why we're laughing. Every one of us has done stuff like that. This was just something that I never forgot. And, you know, God bless Richie's soul. He got sober for a while and moved to Staten Island and was involved in the program. And he passed away. Not from natural causes. And I happened to be up there when he died, and I was privileged, I guess, to be a pallbearer at his funeral. But you know what? I'm tired of being pallbearers at funerals. I'm tired of doing eulogies at funerals of people like in the prime of their life because of this disease. Man, we have a shot here. Jump in and grab it with everything you did to get loaded out there, and your life will take on a new meaning. I promise you that. I promise you that. Mad Glado said, I come to these meetings. Long day, good day, short day. Who cares? The bottom line, I was laughing at myself this morning when I put on, I had a very long day. And I got out very early and I was working straight through and I just got here now. And when I was putting this shirt on in the morning, I imagined, I said to myself, if this was 35 years ago, what are the chances of me wearing a bright yellow shirt to Harlem, a place where I absolutely wanted to not be noticed? I wanted to be in black, like Scott. I didn't want to, like, ever be noticed. What are you kidding me? And I was laughing to myself as I got out of the shower and I got dressed. I said, wow, how cool is that? You know. We spoke a little about sponsorship last week. I'm going to tell you a little bit more about it right now. To me, the second most important thing to getting to Alcoholics Anonymous is getting that right sponsor. To me. Because I was so devoid of any thought process that worked when I got here that I needed someone I could call, follow around like a little puppy dog, like Ono was saying on the way there, you know, like a little chickie. I mean, if my sponsor stopped short, my head would have went right up his ass. Why was that? Because he had what I wanted. It says it here in How It Works. It says it a million times. It says half measures avail us nothing. It doesn't say it avails us half successes. It avails us nothing. You're either all in or you're not. Okay, it says in there, we beg of you. Well, if Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob are begging me, I'm going to pay a little bit of attention. So I got this sponsor, Fred T. He said to me very simply, Paul, I want you to call me every day at 5:30. I want you to tell me where you went. Now keep in mind, I was on disability insurance. Not because I was a war veteran, because I was a mental patient. The government felt it better for everyone concerned if I didn't work. And they sent me these massive checks every month. Third of the month, I went to the mailbox. Had $1,400 a month in 1980. I'm living large. I'm driving a Z car, and I'm going to five meetings a day. I'm like a paid member of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's very, believe me, there's times I think about that right now. So anyway, Fred just said, call me at 5:30, let me know what meetings you went to, where you went today, and then where you going tonight. So I did that every day. Now my life is getting better. I'm living on the intercoastal, and my life is getting better. I'm sponsoring some people. So one day, a year and a half later, I go up to Fred and I said, you know, Fred, I have a bit of a problem, a resentment. He says, really? It was Sunday morning, before the Sunday morning meet at the 101 Club. And he looks at me and he says, what's the problem? I said, Fred, I've called you every day for a year and a half, and you haven't called me once. Let me tell you something. Fred, who I told you before was the love doctor, always told me how much he loved me. Here's what he did. He had these little horn-rimmed glasses, looked at me for 1 second, and he said, you know what, Paul? As soon as you have something I want, I'll be sure to give you a call. And he walked away. Now, if you said that to someone today, in a treatment center or in the not in, they'd say, they'd report you. They'd send a letter to General Service of Alcoholics. They were so mean to me today at the meeting. The bottom line is, if you want this deal with all the gusto that the dying want and reach for this, you'll get it. And if you don't, I mean, part of the issues with what's happening today is, I don't know what it is, but people aren't as dyed-in-the-wool wanting this like I need it. I still want it as much today as I did 31 years ago when I didn't know what it was I wanted. I just knew that I couldn't handle what I had. And that's what it takes, the surrender to someone else, something or someone bigger than yourself. And if you can do that, little by slowly, your life's going to improve. The other side of the coin, and we say it, mental institution, treatment center, penal institution, or early grave. Those are the three choices. I mean, why? Because I was in a hospital with shock treatments and rocking chairs and bars. You think that's different than any $40,000 a month treatment center? No, I was there because I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict, and they had to lock me up. That's why you're there. You have to be locked up, so let us unlock you. Anyway, I get crazy. You know, one thing I'm going to tell you. Oh, no, I hope that wasn't full. Thank God. See, that was the used one. How cool is that? Now, see, I notice these things. I mean, I can say, like, wow, thank you, God. See, I thank God for everything. So I just thank God. I would have been really upset if I had to do the next 10 minutes with no water. I mean, I'm out of breath here. Here's another story. It's sad in the telling, but it's something that I don't want to ever forget. My closest friend in sobriety, Billy Maron, God rest his soul. His sobriety date was February 9th, 1981, 1 year after me. We went sober, we got sober together, we ran around together, we played golf together, we did everything together. He became pretty successful in the antique watch business, made some money. One thing leads to another, he's doing stuff overseas. One thing leads to another. After 18 years of sobriety, he picked up. 18 years of active sobriety, he picked up. On February 3rd, 2002, that's 9 years ago, I was at the Super Bowl in New Orleans, Louisiana. At halftime of the Super Bowl, I got a phone call from Billy's sister that Billy had overdosed in Los Angeles, California, and was dead. So I came from the toilet bowl to the Super Bowl. So did Billy. And he, some reason, somehow went back to the toilet bowl. and had to leave this planet. And he was the greatest, funniest, happiest guy I ever knew, who had this. So there's no place that you ever get to that you got it. We got it for today. And that's all any of us have. Not that I buy the bullshit, if you got up earlier than me, you're more sober than me. What I am going to tell you is all I have is today. And that's all you have is today. The only thing I have is 31 plus years of today's. And how to get through divorces and bankruptcies and IRS audits and liens and indictments. And all of that happens sober, by the way. That's what happens sober. Life sometimes happens. I no longer get ashamed of stuff that's happened to me here. The greatest news is, I haven't had a pickup. By the grace of God and you people, I am convinced to my innermost self that if I pick up, I'm done. And if I don't pick up, everything passes. So Mad Glader said, and no matter what, that's why we make the calls. That's why we have a sponsor. That's why we go through these steps. You know, there's this silly little book I found. It's almost AA approved. It may even be. I don't know. What? Like here at the Tulsa House, they're going to run me out? They sell bumper stickers here. Are you kidding me? Okay. Here's the story. This is from the big book, so it's got to be somewhat approved. This is on page 44. If when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely. Or if when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. Now it goes to the next page, and here's what it says. To make sure everyone understands what we just read, we're going to read the last line again, in capitals. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. That's the bottom line. We've got to get rid of the old and in with the new. And what the new is a belief and an attempt. And that, what is belief? It's just trusting that somebody who came before you, trusting the fact that I have no reason to lie to you, trusting the fact that everything I said here to you tonight is 100% valid and to the point, trusting the fact that if it happened for me, it can happen to you, because it's happened for thousands of others. And it will continue to happen if the desperation in you is great enough to go to any lengths to suit up and show up and put everything else to the side. Because my sponsor always said, he said, thank God you have the gift of desperation. It was many years later I found out that's G-O-D. Yeah. I didn't even know it when he said it to me. Gift of desperation. Group of drunks. Good orderly direction. Whatever words you want to use. Whatever your process is, that's where we're going. You know, it's the third step. And the reality is, right after, in this book, where we just read, where we read at every meeting, and it says how it works, because that would be a good, you know, people read how it works. Okay, great. Now what? And everybody says it. Probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. That God, and then we recite together that God could and would if he was sought. Let me share something with you. The next line, the next sentence in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is the following. Being convinced we were at step three. So you're sitting here every day, you're hearing this how it works. God couldn't would if we were sought, and everyone claps. Well, being convinced we're at step three, we decided, we made a decision to turn our will and our life, our thoughts and our actions over to a power greater than ourselves. We suggest God, whatever your interpretation of God is. The greatest part of the Big Book is when they put in as we understood him. Because that's the general acceptance pamphlet here. We don't care what your religion. This is so far from religion. This is a spiritual way of living. A way where, look, the Ten Commandments, which I know everybody's heard of, they came here 5,700 years ago. And the reason that nobody in this joint followed them? Because everyone begins with thou shalt not. Let me tell you something. I'm looking around this room, and I know when I look in the mirror, you tell me thou shalt not, and I begin shouting all over town. What are you, serious? What the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me what I shall do. I shall come to believe. I shall take an inventory. I shall ask God to remove my defects. I shall make amends to the people I hurt. I shall try to keep that inventory clean. I shall try to get closer to God. And I shall look for the next person suffering. Because by doing that, I'm ensuring my own sobriety. And by doing that and never stopping doing that, my life continues to improve. This is still an instant gratification deal for me. I promise you that. Look, I had a long day today. I really did. I had to drive 70 miles from West Palm to get down here. The reality is I was tired. I was beat. I really wasn't prepared. God entered me somewhere around when I realized it was Ray Allen's anniversary. And I am pumped now. Okay, you guys did it for me. So instead of just dragging it in and whining and bullshitting about it, I was able to reinstill in me what you people have given me, which is that no matter what, a grateful alcoholic won't pick up. And no matter what, if I don't pick up, I'm going to get a chance at tomorrow. And no matter what, if I say thank you, God, tonight before I go to sleep for keeping me clean and sober one more day of life, tomorrow I'm going to wake up sober. And no matter what, because you people have embraced me and given me the privilege to embrace others, my life has improved. How, where could we possibly have the opportunity to impact lives the way we do? You see, there's no one that can help me except someone like me. And that's what the secret of this thing is. That's how it started, Bob and Bill. And once they got it, they immediately realized, hey, we better find somebody here because we're in trouble. We better find someone we can give this to. And Bob calls up the hospital and he says, I have some guy from New York. He has a way to cure alcoholism. And the nurse, who had been there 1,000 times, she says, Bob, are you sober? And she figured he's shit-faced, you know, because he was always, he says, yeah, no, I am. She says, okay, we got just the guy for you. They went there. He became AA number 3. That's Bill D. That's the way this thing works. Little by slowly, we have an incredible journey ahead of us. Just stay the course. Don't pick up. Mad Glitter said, if you get resentful to someone, just don't deal with it. Ask God to remove the resentment. Because the one thing I will say to you, when you're down to nothing, God is up to something. Thanks.